WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present Fight the New Anti-Semitism with your host, Olivier Melnick. Olivier was born into a Jewish family in France. His grandfather was taken from the family home in France and transported to Auschwitz, where he died. Olivier's mother survived the Holocaust because a righteous Gentile family hid her on their farm in France until the end of the war. Today, Olivier is warning that the anti-Semitic winds of the 1930s and 1940s are blowing intensely once again, but this time on a global scale. He warns that this new anti-Semitism is cloaked in a garment of social justice and tolerance that to this day generates a constant stream of irrational thinking. Previous forms of anti-Semitism were obviously costly, taking millions of lives and stripping Jews of their civil liberties and human dignity. Those that claim to be committed to liberty, freedom, and a Judeo-Christian worldview must speak up and oppose the rise of the new anti-Semitism. This broadcast will equip the viewer with the Judeo-Christian principles necessary to fight this latest evil battle to wipe out Israel and the Jewish people and to defeat free societies who have been their friends. And now, here is your host, Olivier Melnick.
Shalom. Welcome to Fight the New Anti-Semitism. I am Olivia Melnick with Chosen People Ministries. Today I want to talk to you about BDS. Most people don't even know what BDS stands for. And today we are going to look at the demonization of Israel, a danger that cannot be ignored by believers. BDS. But before I tell you what BDS is all about, let me tell you about a couple of items that I want to share with you. This book that came out about a year ago, End Times Antisemitism, it's about 5 years of research. It's on the oldest hatred, antisemitism, which is the topic that we've been covering in for the last few broadcasts. This covers a lot more than I can do in the broadcast, so I recommend getting this book. It's about a year old, and it's still extremely current, unfortunately. You can find it along with this DVD, Will the Hatred Ever Stop?, which is an overview of the history of antisemitism over the ages, on two DVD series. You can find those two on newantisemitism.com, as well as my website, oliviermelnick.com, along with other resources. So, what is BDS? Well, BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction. And actually taken from the website of the Boycott, Divestment, Sanction people, current website, we can read some definitions and some statements that they make about the BDS. Boycott, and I quote from them, Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, BDS, is a Palestinian-led movement for freedom, justice, and equality. BDS upholds the simple principle that Palestinians are entitled to the same rights as the rest of humanity. Israel is occupying and colonizing Palestinian land, discriminating against Palestinian citizens of Israel, and denying Palestinian refugees the right to return to their homes. Those are two statements that you can find on the BDS website currently. Now, just in those two statements, we find the word Palestinian or Palestine quite a few times. And I would like to make something clear. Most people today, when they hear Palestinians or Palestine, they think of the modern Arab people that live in the Middle East. And, you know, when you hear the story, you hear the words occupying land, Palestine, colonizing. That's all the negative on Israel. And people are believing that the Palestinians are a people group that has been displaced by Israel, which is absolutely not true. The word Palestine actually comes from 135 AD. Emperor Hadrian changed the word when he defeated Israel and the Jewish people in the last revolt, that major revolt, Jewish revolt against Rome. And to further humiliate the Jewish people, he renamed Israel Palestine or Palestina and Jerusalem Aella Capitolina. What happened is that the name stuck. The idea was just to further humiliate the Jewish people, and I don't agree with that. This was really a bad idea. But the name stuck, remained the historical name for the geographical area of Israel until Israel was reborn as a modern nation. So, until 1948, when we speak of Palestine, we really speak only of a geographical area, the shape of Israel, and that's it. There's no people, there's no culture, there's no archaeology. It's just the land of Palestine, as in the land of Israel. After Israel became a modern nation, then around the time that Arafat came onto the picture, then it became this politically charged word that now is describing a people displaced by colonizing Israel. But they don't exist as such. Palestinians are Jordanians, Syrians, Egyptians, Lebanese, all people from all around the area of Israel that were basically Arabs. And until 1948, we spoke of Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Arabs. Palestinian Arabs and Palestinian Jews. That's what I mean. Palestinian was just a word that described a geographical area. So in the BDS movement, when we hear Palestine, this is not what it's all about. And I disagree with the use of that word from that point on. Up to 48, I don't mind calling Palestine Israel, Palestine. As a matter of fact, I have a dictionary in my collection from 1939, a French dictionary, and when you open it on a page of Palestine, on the page of the flags, Palestine is a flag that is blue and white with a yellow Jewish star on it. That has nothing to do with the flag of Palestine today, which is basically almost verbatim the flag of Jordan, except for a little star on it. So, this being said, let's look at a couple of myths here. One myth, because we're being fed a lot of lies about the Palestinian narrative here. So the reasons usually given to support BDS. Well, myth number one, Israel is guilty of ethnic cleansing. We hear it all the time. Israel is guilty of ethnic cleansing. Ethnic cleansing or genocide is intentional, organized mass murder to eradicate a people group. For instance, the Armenian genocide or, as I mentioned in previous broadcasts, the Holocaust. They both qualify as genocide, as ethnic cleansings. In 1947, there were about 1.2 million Arabs in British Mandate Palestine, which is Israel as we know it today. 1.2 million Arabs in British Mandate Palestine in 1947. Today, there are about 6 million Arabs in the whole land, including 1.8 million in Israel alone. There are more Arabs in Israel today than before 1947. That's the opposite of ethnic cleansing. Demographically speaking, it's growth. It's not ethnic cleansing. On the other hand, there's still less Jewish people today than we had after the Holocaust. From 18 million to 12 million, we lost 6 million, one of them being my grandfather. And today, we are almost at about 15 million. So we have not recovered the numbers before the Holocaust, even though modern times and better health and everything, we should move faster and demographically, we have not. So the opposite of Israel being guilty of ethnic cleansing, there's more Arabs today in Israel than there were in 47, and there's still not as many Jews as the Holocaust. That's myth number one. Myth number two, Israel is an apartheid state. Apartheid was South Africa's way of keeping blacks and whites separated, and as such, it forbade blacks to eat in white restaurants or cafe, attending white schools or universities, and even be treated in white hospitals. That's what apartheid was in South Africa. Even living in a white neighborhood was not allowed, or working in white government. Israeli Arabs are full citizens who do not experience any of the restrictions that were known in South Africa. As a matter of fact, you have Israeli Arabs working in all areas of Israeli governments, even in the Knesset. There's Arab parties that have seats in the Israeli Knesset, in the government. So it's unheard of that you would have anybody Jewish in Arab governments. That doesn't exist. The other way around, it does. I remember being in Israel and having to take, on one of our tours, having to take somebody who had fallen in the old city to the Hadassah hospital in Jerusalem. And to my shock, to my surprise, the triage nurse was a Palestinian woman with a foot head covering, taking our information and pushing us through the system. Only in Israel will you see that. But again, this is the opposite of what we're being told. What a shame. The only difference here, of course, is with citizens of Gaza, the Gaza Strip, and the West Bank. But they really don't want to be Israeli citizens because they are pushing, by choice or by force, the Palestinian narrative. So, where does BDS come from? We're going to talk in a minute about the family tree. You'll see what I mean by that. Is BDS unbiased? Is BDS anti-Semitic? How dangerous is BDS? Is it really dangerous? Are we overreacting? Can believers fight BDS? What can we do as believers, as Christians? So what we need to understand is we need to engage. We need answers to engage. But we need to engage with BDS proponents. But to engage with them properly and to make progress, we need answers. So where does it come from? Well, a lot of people will say that BDS comes from, you know, it's a new movement just from a few years ago. Most people will tell you it was started in 2005 by two men, by Omar Barghouti, a Palestinian, and Mahmoud Abbas, the leader of Fatah, who is in, my math is right, in his 15th year of a four-year term in government. How's that for a ethics. So Omar Barghouti is a Palestinian that is born in Qatar. And what's interesting is that he holds a PhD from Tel Aviv University, but yet he's promoting boycott of everything Jewish, everything in Israel. So I wonder if his PhD is still valid according to his own standards. Just think about that. Some say that the modern version of BDS was officially started not in 2005, but in 2001 at the first World Conference Against Racism, WCAR, in Durban, South Africa, known as Durban 1. There's two more after that, in Durban 2 in 2009 and Durban 3 in 2011. So that's a possibility. So 2005, the modern iteration of BDS, or 2001 through 11, with the Durban conferences. We could also consider the 1945 Arab League boycott of the Jews in British Mandate Palestine. Personally, I like to go even further back in history because I think we can have, we can look parallel, we can compare BDS, the modern BDS movement of today, and what it tries to achieve, and it's in a way is succeeding in many ways, and we can compare it to what took place on November 9th through the 10th, 1938, in Germany, in the night that remains in history known as Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass. So let's talk about the family tree for a second. Looking at where BDS comes from, we have two sides. We have, and I will read you a quote by Alan Dershowitz, who wrote a very good book called The Case Against BDS. He's a Jewish attorney who's written an author of many books. And Alan Dershowitz says, and I quote him, BDS was birthed at an anti-Semite hate fest in Durban. Its grandparents on the one side were the Nazis who organized the boycott of Jewish businesses, academics, and artists in the 30s. Its grandparents on the other side were the Muslim leaders who organized the Arab boycott of all Israeli and Jewish commerce in the years following the establishment of Israel. Its parents are the contemporary bigots who single out only Israel for boycott and seek to use this tactic to end the existence of the world only nation state for the Jewish people. And I would add only democracy in the Middle East. So this is what Dershowitz claims, that on one side we have Nazis, on the other side we have modern Muslim, radical Muslims, and then the people that are really buying the whole narrative without really checking the facts are the contemporary bigots, which we find in people that basically agree with the view of either side of the spectrum, singling out Israel for the BDS movement. But the parallel between between BDS and Kristallnacht and the boycott of the Jewish people in the 30s and 40s cannot be missed. We start with the Nuremberg race laws of 1945. It segregated Jews and stripped them from their citizenship in a very strong way. The Nuremberg laws define a Jew as someone with three or four Jewish grandparents. And that would be make you a Jewish, a Jew by that definition. We have on the screen here a chart of all the different possibilities of one grandparent, two grandparent, three grandparent, four grandparents, and who's Jewish, who's not. And that would basically define who's Jewish and how basically your fate was sealed if you fit anywhere on that chart in the 30s and 40s. So these events, the Nuremberg laws, Nuremberg laws is different from the Nuremberg trials. The Nuremberg trials are positive. This is where the Nazis were trialed after the war. Nuremberg laws were promulgated by the Nazis against the Jews. And these events, this is one of the events that led to Kristallnacht. Another thing that you need to consider is on October 5th, 1938, German Jews had to turn their passports to have them reissued with the letter J on it, stamped in red, for J for Jew, and all women had to have Sarah added to their name as a Jewish name in Israel for the men. So this was basically a way to, when Jewish people would be asked for their papers, when they would walk the streets of Europe, or in that case Germany, they would show their papers and it would immediately identify them as Jews. Which makes me think, I thought that Jewish people could be recognized just by the way they look. I guess not. Think about it. If you have to check the papers to be sure. Just a thought. This was known as the law on the alteration of family and personal names. And this also led to the events of Kristallnacht. Now, Kristallnacht 1938, the Night of Broken Glass, a multitude of pogroms. Pogroms are government sponsored riots. A lot of them took place in the late 1800s in Eastern Europe, to get rid of the Jews, to kill Jews. That's the story of Fiddler on the Roof in Russia, where Jewish people were being attacked by people, by the Cossacks, you know, in government-sponsored riots. So some pogroms took place, and boycotts also started across Germany. Over 7,000 Jewish businesses and synagogues were destroyed in a very short period of time. Almost 100 Jews were killed. You would think this is not a whole lot, but in reality, this was just the beginning, and what historians have agreed upon now is that Kristallnacht has become the date by which all serious Holocaust historians decide that this is the beginning of the Holocaust. This is when it is agreed upon that Kristallnacht started the Holocaust, basically. From that point on, it went downhill. So it is a very significant event in the history of our people. Now, interesting what we saw back then. We see pictures like this picture on the left with the big word Yud and a Jewish star on a storefront, meaning Jew in German, or a synagogue on fire, and I guess on the middle, and then on the other side again, Jude or Yud and Jewish stars on storefronts. Just don't buy from that store, it's owned by Jews. That's basically what it was saying. But this was then, and I guess we're okay now. Well, think again. Let me show you a couple of pictures here. Look at this one. This is a store in Paris about a year ago. Bagels. So here is the logic. You sell bagels, you must be a Jewish store. Nobody knows if the store is owned by Jews, but because you sell bagels, bagels are Jewish bread, so it must be a Jewish store. So now we have this in a store on a main street in Paris that says Juden, Jews. Translation, Jews. And I think the next one is on the Champs-Élysées. I'm not certain if it's on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, one of the biggest avenue in Paris with a lot of stores. But this one says in French, Vend des parfums made in Israel, which means sells perfumes made in Israel. So again, it's trying to force the buyer, the customers, to not buy from that store because we should boycott that store because they sell perfumes purchased made in Israel. And that's painted on a window in 2018 of a store. So when we think that the 30s and 40s are behind us and we're not going to let that happen, and the Jewish motto being never again, well, it's really over again. It's happening again, and it's very, very scary. Or on the ground in a elementary school, Hail Hitler with a swastika done with chalk. I have hundreds of those pictures, all from Europe, some from America, some from all over the world, where the Jews are being, again, ostracized, demonized, and painted as the problem in the world. And that is why I think that to ignore the fact that the BDS movement is not just a movement to bring justice to the Middle East by pressuring Israel into the right moves, which would be, I mean, even though Israel is not guilty of anything bad, but that would be more honorable than what it really is. But in reality, it's not even close to that, because the movement of BDS right now, what it is a movement that was started recently in the Middle East, that is being pushed all over the world, that is being adopted by a lot of people that don't have a clue about the real facts of the Middle East and Israel, and are saying we need to stop Israel from pushing the Palestinians and from occupying and colonizing, when in reality, what the BDS people at the core of the ideology of BDS, all they want is Israel to cease to exist. And some of them, as I will show you in another broadcast, some of them even say that. They say, basically, we cannot see that the Palestinian people can exist unless Israel ceases to exist. And the goal of BDS is for Israel to cease to exist. They're not even hiding their agenda. So that's all the time I have for BDS as far as its connection to the Kristallnacht. In the next broadcast, I will talk to you about what's happening today in the modern iteration of the boycott, divestment, and sanction. Shalom. Thank you.